Hello and welcome to Food Stuff. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we've got sort of a special episode for you. It's about ice cream sundaes.
It's a little different.
Uh-huh.
We're going to present it as sort of a trial.
Yeah.
Our first Food Stuff trial. I hope there's a lot of Law and Order sound effects.
Oh, yeah. Can we do that?
I actually never seen Law and Order, but I know the sound effect.
Ba-dum.
That's all we need. You did it right there.
Yeah.
Just make that occasionally. Pick your spots, but
okay.
I think it'll really add to it.
So surely people were topping their ice cream with like stuff.
Yeah.
Before the ice cream sundae became a whole thing.
Surely. It just makes sense, really.
Oh, yeah. I mean, ice cream is delicious. Other stuff is delicious. Put them together.
Easy as pie.
There's no problem.
But ice cream.
Easy as pie a la mode. But a sundae is something specific.
It is.
Which brings us to our question.
What is it?
Well, I would say.
Okay, this is Lauren's opinion.
Okay, I would say that an ice cream sundae requires at least 2 scoops of ice cream.
Okay.
If it's scooped. If not, then I guess that just goes right out the window. Soft serve. Anyway, 2 scoops of ice cream, some kind of sweet syrup or other like liquid sauce like hot fudge as a topping. And then a second kind of topping for like texture or just punctuation, like sprinkles or chopped nuts or like a maraschino cherry on top, you mm-hmm. know. Some people like Dairy Queen would assert that you don't need anything after that liquid topping.
Really?
For it to be a sundae. Their base sundae is just ice cream and liquid topping.
Oh.
Everything else costs extra.
I see.
But anyway.
You're not mad about that at all.
I'm not mad about it. I just don't think that it's a sundae unless it has 2 distinct toppings.
Okay. I see.
Okay. But anyway, after those basic needs are met, you've got a lot of room for possibilities. You know, whipped cream, candy of whatever kind, whole or chopped, fresh fruit compote, that chocolate sauce that, you know, hardens when it hits the ice cream. Oh, I kind of love that stuff even though it creeps me out.
Don't we all love foods that are just kind of creepy when we think about them?
Yep.
Yep. As you can imagine, we humans add all sorts of toppings to sundaes these days, from fries in Japan to bacon. And we also make huge ones like the Great Pyramid from Cabot's Ice Cream in Massachusetts. It comes in a bowl, almost 2 feet in diameter, loaded with 60 pints of ice cream.
Pints? 60 pints?
60 pints and 12 quarts of toppings.
Oh, my goodness.
And on top of those toppings, you add what I would call other toppings, but they don't. Whipped cream, nuts, marshmallows, and a cherry on top. And allegedly, it serves you and 174 of your pals.
Oh, wow.
I don't have 174 friends, I don't think.
Not that I want to eat a single bowl of ice cream with.
I'm going to get multiple bowls if I got this thing. I'm just going to be straight with everybody.
I've shared a very large ice cream sundae with maybe like 6 of my friends.
Uh-huh.
There was a place that we went to in high school down by the beach that had very large sundaes, and I felt fancy as heck the time that happened.
That sounds very fancy. That sounds like something I've only seen in movies.
Oh, right? Yeah, yeah. I did not wear my bobby socks, but I nonetheless felt, yes. Technically, banana splits and parfaits, stuff like that, are also sundaes. It's sort of like a square rhombus kind of situation, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Nutrition-wise?
They're like the epitome of a treat. I mean, if you think about their name, we're going to get into this in a little bit. Sundae.
It's something special.
One day a week.
One day a week?
I wish I had known that. I wish I had thought of that as a kid, and I could have made that argument better. But I didn't.
It does depend highly on what kind of ice cream and toppings you involve there. It's your mileage will definitely vary.
It's true. My go-to at DQ, Dairy Queen, was hot fudge sundae, hot fudge sauce, and pecans. That was it.
Ooh.
And, you know, simple.
Simple.
I like a crunch.
Yeah.
But remember when we got that frozen yogurt and I put every topping on there?
Every single one. I'm still upset about it.
I am too. Do we have some numbers? We do.
We do. Oh, we have a bunch of delightful numbers. Okay, according to a Yahoo survey of about 1,000 representative Americans over the age of 13, or 13 and over, anyway, ice cream is America's favorite dessert. and 21% of us prefer it to be in sundae format.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. As of 2015, the Guinness World Record for the largest ice cream sundae was made in Canada. It weighed 24.91 metric tons.
Oh.
That's almost 55,000 pounds. About 4.5 tons of that was syrup.
Oh, my goodness.
And according to Guinness, it looked, quote, not unlike a dairy-based tribute to Jabba the Hutt.
Sundae the Hutt.
And there... And they were not lying. It kind of did like a pink Jabba the Hutt. Guinness also reports a record for the longest ever ice cream dessert, a sundae made in Texas with about 800 gallons of ice cream, 2,000 cans of whipped cream, 25 pounds of sprinkles, and 20,000 cherries.
Ooh.
It stretched almost 1,400 meters in length. That's about 4,500 feet.
I had an aunt that told me, and I think we've done a Brain Stuff episode about this, that dairy products gave you nightmares.
Oh.
And she used to tell me if I ate too much ice cream, I'd have bad dreams, I think, because she just didn't want me to eat ice cream at like 10 p.m. But can you imagine the bad dreams you'd have if you had this much ice cream?
It served a lot of people.
Oh, I hope so. I imagine you'd die if you tried to.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, that's not.
Mm-mm.
No.
Mm-mm.
Guinness's most expensive dessert on record is also an ice cream sundae, a chocolate sundae offered for $25,000 at a New York City restaurant in 2007. It included a blend of 28 premium cocos and a golden spoon encrusted with diamonds that was the buyer's to keep.
Well, I guess different strokes for different folks.
And apparently ice cream sundaes are quite posh in New York City this year. Just in April, food writer Pete Wells published an article in The New Yorker titled, "The Ice Cream Sundae Must Be Stopped." It complained that, like, nostalgic ice cream sundaes at restaurants are generally as insipid as they are ubiquitous.
Ooh.
He was real, real mad at them.
Huh. It's interesting because, to me, I don't. Like, if I'm at an ice cream restaurant, I mm-hmm. don't order the sundae. But I do get ice cream with two toppings, which is just in my head, I don't think of it as a sundae. But I guess it is.
Yeah. I think that, yeah, if I'm going to order ice cream from an ice cream place, I definitely get a liquid topping and then a crunchy topping for texture.
Yeah. I'm going to have to reevaluate my sundae definition.
Oh.
Okay.
Questioning well, things.
Yeah.
But this is an episode of many questions.
It is. Uh-huh. It is.
And we're going to get into that after we get back from a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
So now our trial begins.
Yes.
Yes. Because the ice cream sundae is the source of much contention.
Oh, yeah.
People fight over it. There are songs like fight songs. There are official legal documents in what has been dubbed the Sundae Wars. The name is a source of debate, too.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
Like why it's called a sundae?
That's correct, Lauren.
Why it's spelled with that E instead of a Y?
Yes.
Or
yes.
Sometimes with an I?
You monster. Yeah, so the name. There's a popular, possibly apocryphal story is that the blue laws here in the States, and these are laws prohibiting certain activities on Sundays for religious reasons, did not allow for ice cream sodas on Sundays because of their, and this is a quote in a document somewhere, frilliness. No frilliness on Sundays.
No, no.
Clergy preached against, quote, sucking soda on the Sabbath, and any day really, but especially on the Sabbath. So the Sunday with an E, along with names like the Sundi, S-U-N-D-I, and Sondi, S-O-N-D-H-I, were used to maybe lessen the angry response from the religious community who might not appreciate this luxurious treat being named after their holy day.
Oh, I see.
Mm-mm, mm-mm. In 1945, a famous newspaper columnist by the name of H.L. Mencken published a book called The American Language Supplement 1. It included an entry about the suffix day, D-A-E, which read, quote, "Most plausible of their theories ascribes the introduction of the Sunday itself to George Hallower of Marshall, Illinois, and the invention of its name to George Giffey, or Jiffy, of Manitowoc, Wisconsin." He also alleged that the origins of the Sunday in Wisconsin came before all other origin stories, which he probably heard this story in Wisconsin, and this was a shot fired in the Sunday Wars.
Oh, yes. Because people are serious about their origin stories of the Sunday.
They are so serious. Deadly serious. No, no. Perhaps not that serious.
Maybe not deadly, but quite serious.
Quite serious. Three towns claim to be the home of the first ice cream sundae, although one of those is more technical. And we present before you the evidence. You must decide for yourself.
Dun dun.
Yes. All right. Origin story one. Two Rivers, Wisconsin. Current population? 2,000. First. All right. In 1881, George Hallower walked into Ed Berner's ice cream parlor and asked the owner, Edward Berner's, for an ice cream soda. One problem, though. It was a sundae.
Sundae the day?
Sundae the day.
Oh, no, you can't drink a soda on a sundae.
That's right, Lauren, you can't. Undeterred, Mr. Berner's came up with a solution. A dish full of ice cream topped with chocolate syrup. This was unique because at the time, chocolate syrup was reserved for making flavored ice cream sodas. Hallower and Berner's both were impressed with this treat, and Berner's made it a special at his store for the price of $1. The dessert was a huge hit. Not too much evidence exists to back this up, though. One thing the town likes to bring up is a 1929 interview published in the Two Rivers Reporter newspaper with Edward Berner's. In the article, Berners describes how the sundae came to be, allegedly. Quote, "One night, Hallower dropped in and ordered a dish of ice cream. As I was serving it, he spied a bottle of chocolate syrup on the back bar, which I used for making sodas. 'Why don't you put some of that chocolate on an ice cream?' he asked. 'You don't want to ruin the flavor of the ice cream,' I protested. But Hallower answered, 'I'll try anything once.' And I poured on the chocolate. Hallower liked it, and the ice cream sundae was born." Twist, though.
Oh, no.
Yeah, there are a lot of twists in this episode. I hope you're prepared. In 1881, which is when Berners claims this went down, he would have been 18 years old, which is a bit young to own your own store.
Oh, I see.
Even his obituary acknowledged that he, quote, claimed to be the originator of the ice cream sundae. The Wisconsin State Historical Society, though, does not have any such doubt. They officially recognize Two Rivers as the home of the first sundae. A plaque was put up in 1973 to make clear to any who would dare question that Two Rivers is, in fact, the true birthplace of the ice cream sundae. Quote, "In 1881, George Hallower asked Edward C. Berner, the owner of a soda fountain at 1404 15th Street, to top a dish of ice cream with chocolate syrup, with chocolate sauce, hitherto used only for ice cream sodas. The concoction cost a nickel and soon became very popular, but was sold only on Sundays. One day, a 10-year-old girl insisted she have a dish of ice cream with that stuff on top, saying they could pretend it was sundae. After that, the confection was sold every day in many flavors. It lost its sundae-only association to be called, in all caps, Ice Cream Sundae, when a glassware salesman placed an order with his company for the long canoe-shaped dishes in which it was served as sundae dishes."
And there you have it.
That's pretty... That's legit, but also bold.
It uses caps lock. I mean, I don't know what's legit outside of the use of caps lock.
Who knows? It's very serious indeed. Visitors to the town can also visit a replica of Ed Berner's ice cream parlor at the Washington House Hotel Museum. And as always, listeners, if you have been there.
Oh, please send pictures.
Please.
Always.
Please.
Yeah.
Depending on the source, Manitowoc, Wisconsin might come up in this origin story as well, as mentioned in that Mencken piece we talked about at the top. Manitowoc competitor of Berner's George Jiffy, or Giffy, started serving the same ice cream treat. However, he thought 5 cents was too cheap, so he sold it only on Sundays. And because of that fact, it started to be known as the Sunday. The profits became too good to sell only once a week, so he changed the name to Sunday with an E and sold it on any old day.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, so that's our first origin story.
Yep.
Okay. We've got a competitor.
No.
And that competitor is Ithaca, New York. Current population, 30,756.
So a bit bigger than Two Rivers.
A little bit bigger. This is a city that's up in the western bit of New York State in the Finger Lakes region. It's right on Cuyahoga Lake. And Cornell University lives here. It lived there back when Ithaca's story about the ice cream sundae began.
Mm-hmm.
They claim to have such detailed documentation that they can nearly pinpoint the hour that the first sundae was served. So, it's April 3rd, 1892. It's a Sunday. The reverend of the local Unitarian Church, one John M. Scott, visited the Platt and Colt Pharmacy after services. This was a common occurrence. Mr. Platt, that's Chester C. Platt, for your information, was the church's treasurer. So they often met up after services to talk about stuff. Platt had his fountain clerk scoop them up 2 bowls of vanilla ice cream, and then Platt stopped and topped each with cherry syrup and a candied cherry.
Oh.
And Platt and Scott found the result so tasty and so attractive, they decided to name the dish. They were like, this has to have a name.
This got to.
Yeah. And Scott suggested that they name it for the day that it was created, the Cherry Sunday.
Ah.
2 days later, an ad ran in the Ithaca Daily Journal for a Cherry Sunday, a new 10-cent ice cream novelty served only at Platt and Colt's famous day and night soda fountain.
Well, they really didn't waste any time on selling that.
No.
Wow.
Immediately, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like place the ad the next day, runs the day after that.
Yeah.
And this tale has its own Depression-era corroboration. In 1936, apparently having read newspaper articles with other origins of the sundae, the clerk from Platt and Colt who was there that day, Mr. DeForest Christians, wrote into an Ithaca historian with his version of the tale, as told above.
So, intrigue.
Yes.
Sunday intrigue.
Mm-hmm.
But we have another claim.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, we do.
And this one comes to us from Evanston, Illinois, current population, 74,895. And this is where Northwestern University is, which a good friend of mine went to, and I visited her a lot. So I have been to Evanston, Illinois. Okay.
Have you had a sundae there?
Oh, I did. It was peanut butter Reese's cup topped and whipped cream. And I have a picture of me eating it, and I look so happy.
You look happy just thinking about it.
I am. Towards the end, though, I was not as happy because it was quite sweet. But yes, very enjoyable. So this is the one that I mentioned is more technical. They could have been a contender. They don't really claim to be the creator of the sundae, the thing, but they do claim ownership of the name Ice Cream Sundae.
Okay.
That they say they coined in the 1890s. At the time, Evanston was not Evanston, but Chicago's Heaven, or Heavenstown. Heavenstown was not heaven, though, at least not for soda lovers.
Oh.
They led the charge when it came to outlawing the Sunday Soda Menace, as they called it. As the name might suggest, they were pretty religious in Heavenstown. They had an ordinance on the books making the sale of ice cream sodas against the rules, we'll say, on Sunday. Garwood's drugstore came up with a workaround, selling an ice cream soda without the soda on Sundays. So just the ice cream and the syrup, a.k.a. a sundae. The local Christian Women's Temperance Union okayed it, saying it was better than alcohol.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. But that's not all.
Oh, no.
Sunday. Because we have origin story 4 through 8 and plus, even more. Buffalo, Cleveland, New Orleans, and many other cities also say that they invented the sundae. But until they present more evidence, they're going to have to take a back seat.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of evidence, we have some.
Oh, yeah.
But first, we have one more quick break for a word from our sponsor. And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
Our first bit of evidence comes to us from the Two Rivers City Council, and they released a resolution in 2006 titled, Resolution formally challenging the city of Ithaca, New York's claim to be, quote, birthplace of the ice cream sundae.
This is a legal resolution.
It is.
It was, I think, mostly in good fun.
I think mostly.
But they sent it to the mayor of Ithaca.
They did indeed.
And as it is beautiful, we're going to read a few excerpts from it.
Yeah, and I just want you to keep in mind that we trimmed this down quite a bit.
Yeah, this is not the entire thing.
No. It went on far longer. Whereas, it is only fitting and proper that the coolest city in America's Dairyland be afforded sole possession of this title.
And whereas, it has recently come to our attention that Ithaca, New York, not content with just promoting its status as home to one of America's great universities in the Finger Lakes region of beautiful upstate New York, has once again dusted off its claim to be birthplace of the ice cream sundae.
Whereas, Ithaca's experience with ice cream sundaes is of relatively recent vintage, dating to Chester Platt's fabrication of a cherry sundae at his drugstore soda fountain in 1892, a full 11 years after Ed Berner's sundaes began broadening children's smiles and adults' waistlines in our community on the shore of Lake Michigan.
Now, therefore, be it resolved that the city of Two Rivers reasserts its status as the birthplace of the ice cream sundae.
Be it further resolved that the city of Ithaca is hereby directed to cease and desist from its continued claims of being birthplace of the ice cream sundae, lest the city of Two Rivers be forced to take further action to set the historical record straight.
And be it further resolved that the good citizens of Ithaca are urged to henceforth direct their energies to more appropriate pursuits, like cheering on the athletic teams of Cornell University and celebrating the beauty of the Finger Lakes region, while leaving ice cream sundaes to the town that knows them best, Two Rivers, Wisconsin.
Whew. They are not joking around.
0%.
It's beautifully penned.
It is. It is. You know, I couldn't have written that. I don't have the legal wherewithal.
But Ithaca did not take this lying down. The next year, in 2007, two Ithaca High School seniors interning at the History Center in Tompkins County spent 6 months scouring documents to prove that Ithaca is the rightful heir to the sundae throne. Their search brought out several relevant pieces of information.
Yes.
Exhibit A, the ad published on April 5th, 1892, in the Ithaca Daily Journal. This is the oldest record of the ice cream sundae that we know of.
And Exhibit A1, because there's another ad a couple months later from May 28th, 1892, for a strawberry sundae made and served exactly right at the soda fountain of Platt and Colt.
Exactly right indeed. Exhibit B, a brief from the Ithaca Daily Journal's Town Talk section, published April 11th, 1892. This confirms the date, time, location, and ingredients of the cherry sundae.
Exhibit C, the original Platt and Colt Pharmacy ledger books found buried in the archives of Cornell University. These ledgers indicate that the pharmacy had all the makings for their cherry sundae by the early 1890s, and also back up Christensen's, the store clerk's story concerning the dates of his employment at the pharmacy.
Exhibit D, the letter written by DeForest Christiance in 1936, found in the archives of the History Center in Tompkins County. In it, Christiance also said that the sundae was popular with Cornell students and that it must have spread to other places when they went home for the holidays or graduated and moved away.
And Exhibit E, a letter from one William Henderson, a Washington, D.C. trademark attorney, to Platt & Colt Pharmacy, dated 1894. The letter confirms that the sundae not only existed at the pharmacy by 1894, but had reached a level of popularity that Platt & Colt were seeking a national trademark. They did not get the trademark, but a decade later, sundaes would be available around the world. And the issue with the trademark was this. At a national level, you needed an internationally traded product in order to procure a trademark. So the attorney who wrote the letter suggested the Platt & Colt contact instead a New York State Department about local protections.
And you might be thinking, in the face of all of this documentation and evidence, Two Rivers might bow out.
Nope.
No. Nope. In fact, they, basically their response was, maybe it did happen, but you can't prove it didn't. If I had to sum it up, 100 residents of Two Rivers sent the mayor of Ithaca postcards, including one from the ghost of Ed Berners himself.
Ah.
Or that's what the address read, anyway. The mayor also received a DVD containing a Sunday fight song performed by the proud people of Two Rivers.
It's to the tune of Wisconsin State's fight song called On Wisconsin. And the excellent podcast, Food Nonfiction, it's a terrific show on the Radio Public Network, also has an episode about this whole Sunday fight thing, and they tracked down a copy of this recording. In Two Rivers, in Wisconsin, history was made. And our pride in that first Sunday, it will never fade. Made right here by old Ed Berners, 1881. Now we celebrate that Sunday and have lots of fun. Others try to claim the Sunday started in their towns, but the story of our Sunday turns smiles into frowns. Topped with chocolate or with cherries and with lots of nuts. Try to claim our Sunday and we'll kick you in your butts.
Whoa!
It takes a turn there.
It really did. It was all happiness and smiles and then kicking your butt. That sounds like Wisconsin. My ex is, he was from Wisconsin, so I've been several times.
Uh-huh.
And he actually was the one that got me turned on to this whole Sunday debate because he has been to Rivers.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm. He did a report on it in elementary school.
Oh, that's so cute.
Yeah. But Ithaca didn't back down from this either.
No.
Nope. In response, they penned their own Sunday fight song called Two Rivers Police.
And this one is sung to the tune of Moon River, if you're familiar with that.
Yes. And they mentioned this on their tourism website, just by the way. They have this excerpt. Two Rivers, why live in denial? The story you compile won't play. Your sign maker, a truth faker. Without Sunday proof, your claim's melting away. Ed Berners off to fool the world. There's such a lot of fools you see. Though sometimes the truth may offend, still you can pretend. My sweet Wisconsin friend. Two Rivers, please. So we'll enter that into the evidence.
Yep.
Two songs, two Sunday fight songs.
Oh, and yeah, so, I mean, verdict?
The Sunday War wages on. I don't know that it will ever come to an end. Ooh, what if they had a big ice cream food fight?
Oh, that sounds extremely messy.
Yes, it does.
Annie has a twinkle in her eye, you guys.
I want to be like some kind of officiator or judge of this. This one was a lot of fun to do. It also let us practice and I guess demonstrate to everyone why we aren't lawyers.
Oh, yeah, no, certainly that's not, no, not that organized.
No, but we did have fun dramatically reading court documents about the ICE.
Oh, yeah, if anyone ever wants that to happen, let us know.
Yes.
Nobody wants that.
Oh. but please let us know where you stand on this ice cream sundae debate.
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, it sounds like one of those like zeitgeist things that kind of just like kind of like came up out of, you know, the human consciousness around that time. People had ice cream, they had syrups, they put them together, they were delicious.
It's true.
But I think I don't know.
Oh, no. The Two Rivers people are going to send us a DVD. Actually, I would love that.
Yes. I would love that. Right? Oh, sounds so delightful.
It does. And speaking of sending us things, it's time for
Listener Mail.
It's a cherry on top.
Aw.
Yeah. All right. Emily Ray wrote, I just wanted to share a lovely and strange story about maraschino cherries since the episode on them just came out. My family is full of pranksters. Hmm. If you jokingly ask them for something, it'd be no surprise if you got it for your next birthday or gift-giving holiday. For some reason, I was really craving a maraschino cherry one day. I exclaimed to my fiancé, just get me a huge jar of them for Christmas and nothing else. And when we got back to college from our winter break, I was surprised with a huge glass jar full of them. He had opened tons of the little jars to make it for me. He had me open the jar, and taped to the lid was an engagement ring.
Oh.
It was so beautiful and so us. It took forever to get through those things. That's pretty wonderful.
Oh. Oh, yeah. My goodness.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Thanks for sending that. It was very cute.
Yeah. Elena wrote about our pepperoni episode. I was surprised to find out that it was an American invention, though not really surprised since I love Italian food but dislike pepperoni. Pepperoni rolls are very popular in Pittsburgh. Every pizza shop and gas station has them. The way they came to be reminded me of a Pittsburgh sandwich with a similar history. Back in the 1930s, Pittsburgh was a big industrial city with a lot of workers and truck drivers who delivered supplies to the mills and warehouses. A restaurant named Primanti Brothers was open at very early morning hours to serve those workers food. The sandwich had two thick slices of white bread, meat of choice, bologna, roast beef, etc., coleslaw, a thick tomato slice, and French fries. The owners put the fries directly on the sandwich so the drivers could have a whole meal in one hand. Over the years, the restaurant grew, opened multiple locations throughout the region, but the sandwich stayed the same. It is huge and served on wax paper, a treat for visitors of all walks of life, from regular tourists to celebrities to President Obama. The original location is still there and open 24/7, making it hugely popular for the after-club bar crowd. Putting fries on the sandwich created a little tradition in the city. You can find fries on sandwiches, burgers, pizza, and even salads in a lot of places in Pittsburgh. It is an interesting fact for your future French fries episode. There is going to be a French fries episode, right? Right? Right?
Oh, yes.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. That's my my father, who lived in Ohio and Pennsylvania for a number of years, it definitely, like, any time that he could find a deli or a sandwich shop that would put French fries on a sandwich, he was the happiest about it. He would be like, we have to go to this place in South Beach. They put French fries on their sandwiches. I was like, you could just order them. I was like, Dad, you can do this yourself. And he was like, it's not the same. They know how to do it right.
I've never tried this, and I am determined to. She sent pictures.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's important that they're shoestring fries, according to me, because, like, that way, like, you get, like, maximum crisp.
Ooh.
And not, like the mealiness of French fries, which I usually enjoy. It's a whole thing.
If I see a salad with French fries, I'm going to scoff and then probably order it.
Agreed.
Yep. So thanks to both of them for writing to us. If you would like to write to us, you can. Our email is foodstuff@howstuffworks.com.
We're also on social media. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook at foodstuffhsw. Also over on Instagram at foodstuff. We hope to hear from you. There are some changes coming your way. Probably in life in general. I don't know your life, but certainly here on Foodstuff, we're gearing up for some really fun and interesting things. When I say it that way, it probably sounds like the opposite of fun and interesting. But
well, I think in like the Sunday Wars, you never know. But it's good. It's a good. It's like a Sunday.
Yeah, yeah. So don't be startled and stick with us. Thank you, as always, to our super producer, Dylan Fagan. Thank you to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.